Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Divyam Sarasvatim Vyasam Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Mudiraya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Text 23. I think it's scheduled incarnations with specific functions. It's Lord Brahma's recitation of the glorious incarnations of Shishivara Gopina. Asma prasada sumukha kalaya kalesha. Iksvaku vangsa avatirya gurar nideshe. Tishtan vanam sadaita nuja avivesha. Yasmin virudya dasa kandara artim archat. Asmat. Unto us. Beginning from Brahma, down to the insignificant ant. Prasada, causeless mercy. Sumukha, so inclined. Kalaya, with his plenary extensions. Kaleshaha, the Lord of all potencies. Ikshvaku, Maharaj Ikshvaku, in the dynasty of the sun. Vangse, family. Avatirya, by descending in. Guroho, of the father, or spiritual master. Nideshe, under the order of Tishtan, being situated in Vanam, forest. Sadaita Anuja, along with his wife and younger brother Avivesha, entered Yasmin. Unto whom? Virudya, being rebellious. Dashakandaraha, Ravana, who had the 10 heads. Artim, great distress. Archat, achieved. Asma prasada sumukha kalaya kalesha. Ikshvaku vangsa avatirya guror nideshe tishtan vanam sadaita nuja avivesha yasmin virudya dasakandara artim archat. The personality of Godhead Ramachandra, being aggrieved for his distant intimate friend Sita, glanced over the city of the enemy Ravan with red hot eyes like those of Hara, who wanted to burn the kingdom of heaven. The great ocean, trembling in fear, gave him his way, because its family members, the aquatics, like the sharks, snakes, crocodiles, were being burnt by the heat of the angry red-hot eyes of the Lord. There's actually 3 texts here that glorify Ram. 24. Yasma adat udadir uda bayanga vepo Margam sapadi aripuram haravadidaksho Dure suhren matita rosha shushoshna dishtya tatapyamana makara roganakra chakra. Due to his causeless mercy upon all living entities within the universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with his plenary extensions, appeared in the family of Maharaj Ikshvaku as the Lord of his internal potency, Sita. Under the order of his father, Maharaj Dasarat, he entered the forest and lived there for considerable years with his wife and younger brother. Ravana, who was very materially powerful, with 10 heads on his shoulders, committed a great offense against him and was thus ultimately vanquished. Bhakshastalasparsha-rugna-mahindra-vaha dantayar-vidambita-kakub-jusha-udahasam. When Ravana was engaged in the battle, the trunk of the elephant which carried the king of heaven, Indra, broke in pieces, having collided with the chest of Ravana, and the scattered broken parts illuminated all directions. Ravana therefore felt proud of his prowess and began loitering in the midst of the fighting soldiers, thinking himself the conqueror of all directions. But his laughter, overtaken by joy, along with his very air of life, suddenly ceased with the tingling sound of the bow of Ramachandra, the personality of Godhead. Joy. Okay. Yeah. Purports. Okay. Lord Ramachandra, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his brothers Bharata, Lakshman, and Satrughna are plenary expansions. All four brothers are Vishnu Tattva, and were never ordinary human beings. There are many unscrupulous and ignorant commentators on Ramayana who present the younger brothers of Lord Ramachandra as ordinary living entities. But here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the most authentic scripture on the science of God, it is clearly stated that his brothers were his plenary expansions. Originally, Lord Ramachandra is the incarnation of Vasudeva, Lakshman, Shankarshan, Bharata, Pradyumna, Shatrughna, Aniruddha. Sita Devi is internal potency of the Lord and is neither an ordinary woman nor the external potency Durga. Durga is associated with Shiva. Bhagavad Gita 4:7, the Lord explains that the Lord appears whenever there are problems with religion. Ramachandra appeared under the same circumstances, accompanied by his brothers, who are expansions, and his internal potency. Lord Ramachandra was ordered by his father, Dasarat, to leave home for the forest under awkward circumstances, and the Lord, as an ideal son, carried out the order, even at the occasion, on the occasion of his being declared the king of Ayodhya. One of his younger brothers, Lakshmanji, desired to go with him, and so also his eternal wife, Sitaji, desired to go with him. The Lord agreed to both of them, and altogether they entered the Dandakaranya forest to live there for 14 years. During their stay in the forest, there was some quarrel between Ramachandra and Ravana, and the latter kidnapped the Lord's wife, Sita. The quarrel ended in the vanquishing of the greatly powerful Ravana, along with all his kingdom and family. Sita is Lakshmiji, or the goddess of fortune, but she is never to be enjoyed by any living being. She is meant for being worshipped by living beings, along with her husband, Sri Ramachandra. A materialistic man like Ravana does not understand this great truth, but on the contrary, he wants to snatch Sita from the custody of Ram, and thus incurs great miseries. The materialists who are after opulence and material prosperity may take lessons from the Ramayana that the policy of exploiting the nature of the Lord without acknowledging the supremacy of the Lord is the policy of Ravana. Ravana was very advanced materially, so much so he turned his entire kingdom, Lanka, into pure gold. Die. Yes, full material wealth. But because he did not recognize the supremacy of Ramachandra and defied him by stealing his wife, he was killed, and all of his opulences and power was destroyed. Ramachandra is full of 6 opulences, and he is therefore mentioned as Kalesha, master of all opulences. Die. And then Prabhupada gives a nice explanation of the fact that when Krishna glances at something, it makes everything burn to ashes. Find the purport to the last text where Ravana is being destroyed. It says, however powerful a man may be, a living being may be, when he is condemned by God, No one can save him. Simply, however weak one may be, if he is protected by God, nobody can annihilate him. Die. He says, he is Ram Vijaya, the victory of good over evil. And it's also called Dasara. It's the 10th day of the lunar month. And before this, there's a 9-day festival, Navaratri, 9 nights of worshiping Durga. And now in some places it's kind of become like a cinema-type festival. But originally it was, and there's some places in India still respected that way, is for worshiping Durga. And before that it was even known as worshiping Durga for, right, the benefit of Vishnu. And it finishes, though, with Dasara, which is this Ram Vijaya festival. Of course, in India they have big, you know, hockey fields, or what we call cricket fields. They make these big statues, effigies of Ravan, like, you know, maybe 3 stories tall or something like that, very big. But most of the newspapers they presented as some kind of allegory. You know, it is the allegory of how good always conquers evil. Something, okay. No, it actually happened. You know? But of course, it happened during the Treta Yuga when things were much different. Right? It's like if you go to New York in the wintertime, there's no fruits, no flowers, nothing. You know, that doesn't mean that fruits and flowers don't exist. Doesn't mean there's not sunshine and fresh air. But in Kali Yuga, everything is smaller, condensed. So it actually was a Ravan. There actually was a Ram. There actually was all these problems going on. You know, we had this festival one time in Cheru's temple in Spanish Fork in Idaho, Utah. And it's all Mormons there, a very powerful Mormon state. If you go to some town, the mayor is a Mormon, chief of police is a Mormon, the principal of the school is a Mormon. Okay, you know. But they like us. They like devotees. They even give a donation to build a temple. You know? So he puts on these different festivals. And they're very Kshatriya-type people. Their religion is so rough. Ram Vijaya is a real nice festival for them. And always, you know, thousands of people come for the festival like that, hundreds. So the first year they had it, I was there, and it's out in the country. They have, like, you know, it's like these country properties, maybe 20 acres, like that, each one. So they have a nice property with llamas and a radio station. Something by Bobby, his wife is a very good artist. So they had a very, very good drama. This one devotee was a really Halayuja, very good actor, and the whole thing was on the stage. And at the end, we went around the back of the temple, and there was a big, big effigy of Ravan she made. It was about maybe 5 meters tall, like that, out of cardboard, painted. And then they had big loudspeakers, you know, chastising or criticizing, what do you call it, challenging Ram. So the actor was there with a wireless microphone. I've come to fight with you, or this and that. And his big voice, Ravan, was saying, you know, ha, 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 you worm Ram. How do you think you can kill me? Now I'm manifesting my full form like that. Ha, 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 ha. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You know? So then Ram said his lines, and he shot this arrow with a flame on it. So it hit the cardboard. It sounded really good, like, fuck, you know, fuck. You know? And the fire started. And we were all the monkeys. So we had these rocks we were throwing like that. Yeah, yeah, go to hell, Ravan. You know? But then they forgot to cut the grass. And it was like this very dry grass, about this big. So Ravan started falling down the fire and started catching the grass on fire, you know. And this would have spread, like, you know, for hundreds of miles or something like that. So all of a sudden we're all panicking, and, you know, all of our arrogance and everything. You know, yeah, we're tough, you know. So we're sitting there trying to put this fire out. And while we're doing this, the loudspeakers are still going, you know. And it was like this whole, like, lesson, like, you know, don't get so proud. You know, don't think that Ravan's going to be so easy to defeat, you know, like that. So finally we got it extinguished. The fire department came, you know, they took prasadam, stayed for the festival for about half an hour, showed us how to use the lawnmower. You know, said, cut back 10 feet, like this and that, you know, so on. You know? So these festivals are bhakti yoga, no? Hearing the katha, having the pastimes. If you do this, you don't have to do anything else. Everything else will happen. People will automatically come, and they'll support you, everything else like that. You know? So these verses in the first canto and the second canto describe very nicely the pastimes like that. But also there's a Ramayana by Krishna Dharma, a devotee, no? So I extracted this part here. I had a chance to edit it down like that, so I'll try and edit it as I go. So the battle's going on. Okay, and then, who is it? Then, some point during the battle, Lakshma really gets it. You're chopped up in pieces like that. So, Sushena asked for more of the celestial herbs which Hanuman had fetched from the Himalayas. The herbs were brought quickly, and Sushena administered them to Lakshman. By the divine power of the herbs, Sanjeevani, the prince slowly returned to consciousness. Then Sushena carefully administered the herb Vishalyakarani and Sandani, which together healed Lakshman's grievous wounds and repaired his bones. Slowly he sat up and looked around. Ram was overjoyed. He pressed Lakshman to his bosom and with tears in his eyes and said, "By good fortune you have been saved from the jaws of death. If you had died, I would not have been able to carry on this fight." Lakshman was pained to hear this, and he replied, "You have taken a solemn vow to kill Ravan and install Vibhishan on the throne of Lanka. You should not make that false for any reason. O great hero, fulfill your vow at once. Let us see the evil Ravan lying dead on the battlefield, cut down by your arrows." Jai Gurudev. Ram seized his bow. A terrible anger took hold of him. Lakshman had spoken well. The time for the arrogant demon's destruction had arrived. As Ram looked about, he saw Ravana seated on his golden chariot. Having rested, the demon was again rushing at Ram as the malefic planet Rahu rushes toward the sun. From where he stood, Ram immediately shot a steady stream of arrows that shone like fire. They rained down upon the demon, who in turn loosed off torrents of shafts that hissed like serpents as they fled at Ram. From the sky, the demigods observed the combat. Seeing Ram standing upon the ground, Indra desired to assist him. He summoned Matali, his charioteer, and asked him to bring his chariot. In a moment, Indra's radiant chariot appeared, drawn by... What is a big vehicle now? 100 horsepower? 120 horsepower? How many horsepower does Indra have? 1,000. Like that. 1,000 horsepower, Indra. Okay. Yeah. Indra ordered Matali to take it to Ram, and the chariot at once descended on the battlefield next to the prince. With folded hands, he respectfully addressed Ram. "Here is my Lord Indra's chariot, O Raghava. Here also is his mighty bow and other infallible weapons, as well as his invincible golden armor. Please use all these to attain victory over Ravan, the enemy of the gods. I shall act as your charioteer. Ram gazed with amazement at the wonderful vehicle. It was bedecked with glowing jewels and flower garlands, had a tall pole of cat's eyes standing in the center. The chariot was suspended, one bow's length above the ground, and a crystal staircase came down to Ram's feet. He circumambulated the chariot and then climbed on board. Okay. He put on Indra's armor quickly and took up his bow and celestial arrows. As he stood upon the divine chariot, he looked like the sun illuminating all quarters. At Matali's command, the heavenly steed surged forward and the chariot moved off with a rumbling sound. Ravana realized that Ram was being assisted by his mortal enemy Indra. Therefore, he became even more enraged and fired a celestial missile which unleashed hundreds of thousands of dreadful-looking serpents. Wow. Their mouths wide open, vomiting fire, wreathing and hissing. They came from all sides towards Ram. As the venomous snakes descended upon him, Ram at once invoked a weapon presided over by Garuda. Okay. A shower of arrows shot forth from his bow, turning as they flew into golden eagles with fierce talons and sharp curved beaks. The mystical eagles intercepted and destroyed all of Ravana's serpents. Ooh. The demon roared furiously. He struck Matali and all his steeds with a forcible torrent of shafts with glowing steel heads. The Rakshasa then sent a crescent-headed arrow which tore down the chariot's golden standard. He followed this with countless other straight-flying arrows that struck Ram on every part of his body. In seconds, Indra's great chariot was completely covered by Ravana's arrows, so that it was completely invisible. With his ten massive heads, to his ten heads and his massive bow, Ravana stood in his chariot, looking like the Mainika mountain rising out of the ocean. Observing the demon overwhelming Ram with his arrows, the gods and rishis felt despondent. The monkeys became fearful. They observed grim-looking omens. The sun became dim. The sea tossed with waves that rise to the sky. Jackals howled, and ghosts and wraiths darted on the battlefield. So intense was Ravana's assault that Ram was unable to lift his bow and fit his arrows. Rama's eyes turned crimson with rage. Ooh, Rama's eyes turned crimson with rage. He began to think of the destruction of the entire Rakshasa race. Like that. With great expertise, Matali drove a chariot upward, away from the hail of Ravana's arrows. It burst forth like the sun emerging from a cloud. The gods showered blessings on Ram, while the Daityas and Danavas uttered benedictions for Ravana. When the king of the Rakshasas saw his adversary again stationed before him, he took up a fearful-looking dart. The terrific weapon had spikes resembling mountain peaks. It had a flaming point that glowed with a brilliance that could not be looked upon. The dart was dear to Ravan and had been kept carefully and worshipped by him, reserved for a time when he faced a deadly enemy. It was irresistible to gods and demons alike. Ravana raised it with his serpent-like arm and roared with full force. The earth shook and the mountains trembled, sending their lions and elephants fleeing in fear. Looking at Ram, the Rakshasa thundered, "This dart, powerful like a thunderbolt, will now take your life. Hurled by me, it will strike both you and your brother, leveling you with the Rakshasas you have slain. Guard yourself if you can." Okay. The demon threw the dart. It flashed through the air, covered by a circle of lightning, and emitting a deafening scream. Ram instantly sent 100 arrows, but they were deflected and fell useless on the ground. Without losing a moment, Ram took up Indra's celestial javelin. He forcefully hurled it, and it flew like a blazing meteor straight at the dart. Struck by the lance, Ravana's weapon was split apart and dropped to the earth. The javelin gave off a delightful sound from the many bells tinkling and returned to Ram's chariot. Ram immediately followed that astonishing feat by sending a fierce volley of arrows at the demon. They struck Ravana in all of his limbs and pierced his 10 heads. The demon blazed with anger and replied with an equal number of his own arrows. Ravana intercepted Ravana's arrows while simultaneously continuing to strike. The Rakshasa then released an even greater number of arrows that penetrated Ram's defense and pierced his armor. With blood shining on his breast, Ram looked like a kinsuka tree in full blossom. Neither opponent could easily see the others, so great was the number of arrows filling the air. Ram pulled clear of Ravana's attack and laughed. "Ha, ha, ha! You are proud of your strength, O Rakshasa, but it will not save you now. Indeed, since you stole my wife while I was not present, you cannot be considered a hero. You are a shameless coward, given over to vanity alone. Had you tried to take Sita in my presence, you would not be alive today. By good fortune, I see you now in the battlefield. Prepare to receive the results of your despicable and evil acts." With redoubled strength, Ram then sent wave upon wave of arrows at Ravana. The prince felt increased enthusiasm for the fight. He invoked all the celestial missiles. They appeared before him. In great joy, he fired weapons at the demon one after another. Haribo, haribo. He recited incantations. He recited incantations with full concentration as he released the arrows. Charged with mystic power, the divine Astras tore at Ravana and sent him reeling. He staggered about in his chariot. The Rakshasas showered with rocks. The Rakshasa was showered with rocks and trees by the monkeys. Okay. The demon was reduced to a sorry plight. He sank down on the floor, seeing this his chariot veered away. Okay. He was stunned for some time, but after that he came back to consciousness, and with great fury he chastised his charioteer for making him into a eunuch and taking him away. But the charioteer said, "You know, it's my duty to get you out of here. I just did what I was supposed to do. Now get back and fight with this guy." Okay. Okay. So then he forgave him. Okay. Urged on by Ravana, the charioteer then lashed the horses and returned in a few moments to stand against Ram. On the battlefield, Ram himself was expressing his exhaustion from the fight. In the heavens, the great Rishi, Agastya, saw this and desired to assist him. Agastya had been observing the battle from the sky with the demigods. He now descended to Ram's chariot and spoke to him. "O mighty armed Ram, please listen as I tell you the secret of a highly different confidential prayer, the Aditya Hridaya. This prayer will invoke the powerful spiritual energy from the heart of the sun. This is the very effulgence of the Supreme Vishnu himself. With this power, you can overcome any obstacle and destroy to the roots all of your enemies." The Rishi then returned to the heaven, and Ram turned towards the sun. After sipping water for purification, he recited the Aditya Hridaya. At once he felt extreme happiness, and his mind became enlivened. All his fatigue vanished. He took up his bow and stood firmly in Indra's chariot, fixing his gaze upon Ravana. In the heavens, the sun god in person said, "May all victory attend you." Ram saw Ravana's chariot flying towards him, filling all quarters with a rumbling sound. It was drawn by huge black horses with the heads of hideous fiends. Like that. It shone with a dreadful luster and was adorned with brilliant rubies and celestial sapphires and rows of flags. My God. Well, yeah. Ram said to Matali, "From the way in which he is darting back into the fray, I can see he has been on his own destruction." Picking up Indra's bow, Ram's tempered his anger with patience and awaited an opportunity to attack the demon who was maneuvering on the battlefield. Matali skillfully drove the chariot in circles and slowly closed in on Ravana. The two opponents released streams of arrows and appeared like two proud lions intent on killing each other. Many frightful omens appeared, blood came from the sky, meteors were falling, thunderbolts fell upon Ravana's army. Yeah, his horses were crying and emitting sparks from their mouths. My God. Yeah, all these unfavorable signs. On Ram's side, there are many favorable signs. Yeah. So when I'm fighting here, like this and that, quite some time, and he can't defeat him. So it says that it goes on for about half a day, the fighting. So I guess until about maybe about noontime or something, I don't know, Ravana and Ram are going to be fighting it out. So expect to have a very tumultuous day today with many, many attacks and many many counterattacks. No arrow shot by Ram failed to find its mark. The sky was completely filled with golden plumed shafts. The missiles of the two fighters met together in hundreds and thousands. They created explosions of fire and billows of smoke. Ram and Ravana fought vehemently for hours without interruption, exchanging blow for blow. Neither felt weary nor inclined to give an inch, though if those observing the fight felt their hairs standing on end. No one could take his eyes off the furious fighters as they battled. Okay. Yeah. Ravana sent 20, 60, 100, 1,000 arrows at Ram, aiming at his vital parts, seeking to kill his charioteer, his horses. Ram responded with twice that number, digging shafts into Ravana's steeds and charioteer. Yeah. Even after fighting for half a day, neither seemed to have the upper hand. Ravana then composed himself and once again invoked the Rakshasa Astra, imbuing it with all his mystic potency. Immediately the air was filled with a thick shower of every kind of weapon. The globe seemed to shake and the ocean became agitated. Serpents and devils appeared, screaming in the sky, emitting fire from their mouths. The sun lost its brilliance, and the wind began to blow, ceased to blow. In the heavens, the gods themselves became terrified and cried out, May all be well with the worlds. With full concentration, Ram again invoked the Gandharva Astra, singing and dancing, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Jai, which caused hundreds of thousands of arrows to appear and counter Ravana's weapons. Those awful and demoniac missiles fell to the ground and burned up, being pierced by Ravana's shaft. The battle between Rama and Ravana can only be compared to the battle between Ram and Ravan. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Rama, Rama Shastra Hambritam. Among wielders of weapons, I am Rama. So you might suspect that even Krishna himself doesn't show his full potency as wielding weapons except in this form of Ram. This is why all these pastimes are eternal. If you go to Vrindavan, all the pastimes are there in different places. You know, if you go to Kama on Kamyavan, you'll find all the Ram Lila. There's a Lanka, there's an Ashokvan, and there's just unlimited monkeys. And there's no reason why, but there's just so many monkeys there, you know? Because that's where Radha and Krishna are always playing these pastimes. And there's so much fun, they never want to stop, right? So therefore they become eternal Nitya Lila, and some people participate in this forever like that, you know? So, you know, this is all Krishna Lila. Yeah. Such a fight had never been seen at any time by any of the demigods. They watched anxiously as Ram came under repeated attacks and how he remained calm. He took his bow. He took from his bow a great razor-headed arrow that resembled a venomous snake. In an instant, he fitted it and fired the arrow. That arrow, imbued with mystic power, divided in ten, and tore off the demons' heads. Jai! But they immediately grew back. Oh, my God. Ram sent another weapon, again cut off his heads. Again they grew back. Ram struck down 100 heads, but the demon remained standing. Without slowing his attack for even a moment, Ram contemplated this wonderful phenomena. How was this demon to be killed? No weapon seemed to be able to take his life. It looked like the fight might go on forever. Vibhishan quickly approached Ram. He told him that the demon had a boon from Brahma, that his heads and arms could never be destroyed. In Ravana's heart was a store of celestial nectar which renewed the life of his entire body. The only way to kill him was to strike at his heart with a divine weapon that could dry up the nectar. As Ram considered this, all the while raining arrows on Ravana, Matali turned to Ram and spoke, "O Ram, the time for this one's death has come. Recall now the prayer Agastya told you. Agastya also gave you an arrow when you were in the forest. Imbue that arrow with the force of the Brahmastra and kill the demon by piercing his heart." Accepting Matali's advice, Jai, Shishu, Radha Gopinath ki, Jai, Sitaram ki, Jai. Accepting Matali's advice, Ram remembered the celestial arrow which Agastya had given him long ago in the forest. At once it appeared in his hand, and he fitted it in his bow. Its shaft was made of ether, pure space, and its weight consisted of Mandara and Meru mountains combined. Wow. The wind god presided over its shaft, and the fire god over its plumes. The sun god was installed at its point. It looked like the rod of universal destruction at the time of the destruction of the universe. Yeah. Ram again chanted the Aditya Hridaya prayer and invoked the infallible Brahmastra. As Ram drew back his arrow, he shone so brilliantly that no one could even look at him. He released the weapon and it flew at Ravana, lighting up the earth and sky and roaring like a tumultuous ocean. It struck the demon in his chest, even as he stood firing his own weapons at Ram. Piercing right through his heart, the arrow emerged from Ravana's body, soaked in blood, and entered the earth. Ravana whirled about and let out a scream that seemed to shake the entire universe. His body dropped down, his bow dropped from his hands, and he fell down from his chariot like a mountain struck down by Indra's thunderbolt. The Rakshasas fled, panic-stricken in every direction. They shed tears of grief to see their lord slain. The monkeys leapt about, chasing the Rakshasas and shouting in joy. The sounds of drums and the celestial instruments sounded from the sky. A delightful breeze blew on the battlefield, carrying heavenly odors. A dazzling shower of brilliant flowers fell from the sky and covered Rama's chariot. The gods and rishis praised Ram, who stood blazing with splendor. The battle was over. Die. Rama climbed down from his chariot and was surrounded by Lakshman, Sugriva, Hanuman, Angada, Jambavan, and Vibhishan, who all praised him for his incredible feat. Jai. Shri Ramachandra ki jai. Jai. So any comments? Any questions? Anybody disturbed by Ravana's death? He was a good guy. Some places in the South India, they have statues of Ravana. They say that Ram was this guy and came down and killed him, and he was really a good guy and everything else like that. And they stopped now, but before it was like that. You know, Ram was an evil guy from Ayodhya. They're following him. You know? So Ram Vijay, and you know, it's tough, big battles, right? You know, so you know, we should also expect that, right? In our fight against evil, trying to support, you know, Ram. It may be, you see, the main thing again is that Ram was never Utsahan Nishchaya Dari, Nishchayana. He never deviated from Nishchayana and Dariyat. Yeah, even though he was enthusiastic, but there was always one problem after another, but he didn't deviate for one moment. He never became discouraged for one moment, right? Just every single moment, just go on with the next alternative, next alternative, next alternative. And help came, right? Help came. It's kind of an essential thing. You know, we have to understand that. Actually, one time Prabhupada said, the magic will not be done by you, nor me, nor any living being. The magic will be done by Krishna when we become pure devotees of Krishna. So all we can do is make our force with full effort and determination and intelligence without deviating. Don't leave, don't deviate, right? Stay right there. And then the magic will happen when Krishna wants it, like that. You know? Yeah. Today's also Madhvacharya's appearance day, which is quite appropriate, because some people say Madhvacharya is an incarnation of Hanuman. So what a day to appear on Ram Vijaya. Okay. The Wikipedia dates him at 1238 to 1317. Prabhupada also has a biography, but I couldn't find it. Yeah. 1238 to 1317. He was the chief proponent of Tattvabad, yeah, popularly known as Dvaita school of Hindu philosophy. It is one of the three. It is one of the three most influential Vedanta philosophies. Madhvacharya was one of the most important philosophers during the Bhakti movement. He was a pioneer in many ways, going against the standard conventions and norms. According to tradition, Madhvacharya is believed to be the third incarnation of Vayu, after Hanuman and Bhima. Madhvacharya was born on the auspicious day of Vijay Dasami in 1238, Christian era, A.D., at Pajak, a tiny hamlet near Udupi. Narayana Panditacharya, who later wrote Madhvacharya's biography, has recorded Narayana Bhatta as the name of his father and Vedavati as Madhvacharya's mother. They named him Vasudev. Later he became famous by the names Purnapragna, Anandatirtha, and Madhvacharya. Before the birth of Madhva, when his parents had gone for a purchase in the market, a beggar climbed up a big flagpole and announced, Bhagavan, Lord Vayudeva, is going to take birth for the revival of Dharma in Pajakshetra to a couple. The prediction made by the beggar was discussed by the parents of Madhva till they reached home. Like that. Yeah. And then after that, of course, there's so many incredible pastimes. As a child, he would jump over the house and do all these strange things. His father had accumulated a big debt. The guy came for the money. And so he turned a bunch of tamarind seeds into gold coins. And then one thing after another. Then at one point what happened? He decided to He was going to take sannyas. Because, he met a Ramanuja. His guru was a Mayavadi. He was a Shankaracharya follower. And then Baba met one Ramanuja sannyasi. And from him he got this idea that, no, God's a person, which in his heart he felt was very true. So then he was trying to preach this and everything else, and nobody would accept him. So his father said, well, nobody will listen to you. Don't be sad. Unless you're a great, great renunciator, a great conquering scholar, nobody will accept you. So he meditated on it all night and finally decided he was going to become a renunciate. So he walked out of the house at, like, I don't know, like 12 years old or something. And they found him in the next morning in Tridhikramacharya's ashram, a very famous renunciate. They said, let him come back. And he said, well, you know, whatever God wants, you know. So then Vasudev said, I'm staying with Guruji, you know, he said. But you're our only son, our whole line will stop. He said, okay, I won't take sannyas until you have another son. I promise you that. So they left. So he was there, and he took initiation from Tribhikram Swami. And right away he got an argument with him, because he was presenting this, you know, Shankaracharya's philosophy. And he was presenting, but Madhva, even as a little boy, would present such simple, clear arguments that, you know, the great pundit Tribhikram Swami was having trouble arguing with him, you know, so he was irritated with him. But, you know, so finally, after some time, Madhva paid his obeisances and said, please forgive me, you're my guru, but I can't understand this. And Tribhikram said, all right, we'll discuss it later. You know, I accept you as a wonderful disciple. I love you very much. So it went on like that. And then finally a child was born to his parents, a son, so he took sannyas. And I think that's his name then was, what was it, Anandatirtha, I think, at that point. And his guru gave him the benediction. He said, may you dominate the world of metaphysics, like that. So he took off. He preaching and everything else, and he was successful in many places. He was banned from some of the biggest temples in India because he's preaching Dvaita philosophy, very contrary to Shankara. But then he thought, I have to get my commentary confirmed, you know. So he went up to the north of the Himalaya Mountains, and he wanted to see Vyasadeva personally. He went to Bhadrika Ashram. He was meditating, praying. Then finally he started going into the Himalayas. His disciples couldn't follow him. Finally one was left. He was trying to follow him. And he looked up and he saw Madhvacharya jumping from one mountain to another. And he looked back and saw this last disciple struggling alone there. So he kind of blew like, and the disciple, next thing he knew, was landing on the ground back at the bottom of the mountain with the rest of the disciples. So Madhvacharya, as the story was, went on. He met Vyasadeva. He recited his interpretation of Bhagavad Gita as theistic. And Vyasadeva said, yes. So that's how our sampradaya is connected then. It's a mystical connection between Vyasadeva and Madhvacharya. So he came back and dictated this, and he was traveling and preaching all over India. He was conquering everybody, left and right, up and down, on and on like that. And so many big Mayavadis, other peoples all became his sannyasis and everything else. Finally, his own guru finally came to the conclusion that, yes, you're right. We were all promoting this idea of Brahman effulgence, Brahman bliss, but there is no bliss. Like that. So he also became a Vaishnava. You know? And so many things, you know, miraculous fights with wrestlers, and he found the beautiful deity of, what's it called? Gopal. What's it called? He's churning like that in a lump of a big chunk of sandalwood paste. He's still there, worship like that. You know? So we're from Madhva Sampradaya, but we have some differences with the current, you know, predominating philosophy, the Tattva bodies like that and so on like that. As far as I understand, their basic idea is that when you do your Varnashram duty, God is pleased with you. So be a good father, a good mother, and then God is pleased with you. Because many Christians also have the same idea. But Lord Chaitanya is saying, well, what about God's satisfaction? Directly like that. So he defeated them, and they're Vaishnavas, but, you know, not in this full sense of a relationship with Krishna, the Tattvavadis. So Madhavendapuri was a sannyasi, as described in Madhva Sampradaya. So we come through that range through Lord Chaitanya, through Madhavendapuri, like that. Yeah. So, today is Madhvacharya's appearance day. Today is also the disappearance day, anniversary of Bhakti Srup Damodar Maharaj. Yeah, like that. And he finally went into Samadhi. He was in Manipur. And he went into Samadhi like on Teen Goswami Samadhi, which is 2 days from now, like that. You know, yeah, very interesting. Because he was also a Singh, like that. Kshatriya guy, like that. So, any other comments about Ram, Madhva. Okay, so good luck today in the battle with the Rakshasas. So Prabhupada ki, Harikrishna Mantra ki, Ravana ki. Oh, God. Be careful of them.